writing prompts. They're actually more fun to read than they are to write. This week on Be the Story, we're going to look at a couple of submissions to Alkara Project number 39 from November 2005. The Alkara Project is a monthly writing group run by Laurie Murray, and most of the submissions are worth reading. We'll only have time to talk about a couple of them, but that we will do this week on Be the Story. Welcome to Be the Story. I'm Tim King. I'm really excited to be able to talk to you today about the Alkara Project, because really there is so much good stuff that's submitted by Alkara members. I don't even have time to talk about all the good stuff that I'd like to talk about. Someone posted to one of the email lists to which I'm subscribed a link to a talk Larry Lessig gave in 2002 at the O'Reilly Open Source Conference. Now, he was speaking about software, but now with DRM and storyline patents upon us, he might as well have been thinking about literature, film, interactive media. Well, actually, maybe he was. This is a powerful, inspirational speech about copyrights and creative patents. He contends that they restrict creativity rather than motivating it, and urges us to take action. The speech is available in Flash format as well as in MP3. Now, in case you don't know who Larry Lessig is, he's a professor of law at Stanford Law School and founder of the school's Center for Internet and Society. More relevantly, he chairs the Creative Commons Project and also serves on the board of the Free Software Foundation, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the Public Library of Science, and Public Knowledge. He's also written several books, including Free Culture, The Future of Ideas, and Code and Other Laws of Cyberspace. The first of those that I mentioned, Free Culture, which is his latest book, is actually available for free on the internet under a Creative Commons license. And as you know, Be the Story is also licensed under a Creative Commons license, as are most podcasts. I mentioned that fact, shifting gears here, on the new help page at BeTheStory.com. Since podcasting is still very new, there are a lot of people out there who don't know what a podcast is or how to listen to it. I'm still having to explain to my friends when I tell them I'm doing a podcast. Of course, the first question they ask me is, well, what's a podcast? Yeah, I love technology. Anyhow, that's primarily what the help page is there for. I have a new mixer on order. I expect it to arrive early next week. So the sound of Niagara Falls that you hear in the background, you should not hear it in next week's podcast. It'll probably also improve the timbre of my voice. It's pretty interesting what having good gear will do for you. And while this is good gear, it's not expensive. For any of you who are podcasters, it's one of the Behringer UB series Eurorack mixers. I used one of these when I used to work developing embedded software for electronic synthesizers and other professional electronic musical gear. It's a really slick, low-cost, bare-bones, but good-quality mixer. In a moment, we'll be right back and talk about Elizabeth Benefield's creative essay, Sea Change. That's sea spelled S-E-A, as in the ocean. And Nathan Nelson's short story, Midnight Mass. After this quick word about Hurricane Katrina, and you know, Hurricane Katrina has kind of faded from the national limelight, but the people who were devastated by Hurricane Katrina still do need our help. So here's Mer Lafferty to tell you about one effort in that direction.
Hi, this is Mer Lafferty from Geek Foo Action Grip. I'd like to take a break from this excellent podcast to tell you about Hurricane Katrina. Well, it's very likely you already know about Hurricane Katrina, but what you may not know, and what may interest you, is that in the wake of the disaster, several professionals from the RPG industry, including writers, editors, illustrators, and layout, got together and wrote a book. Beyond the Storm, Shadows of the Big Easy is a collection of short stories, essays, art, and role-playing game materials inspired by the culture, landscape, and city of New Orleans. With contributions from three continents and from across the spectrum of role-playing, the book has all proceeds from the sale going to support Katrina disaster relief. Join the authors and artists as they explore the Big Easy as it could have been and how it might be in the future. Beyond the Storm is now available for purchase in PDF and print formats. You can check it out at lulu.com or beyondthestorm.us.
If you're a writer, you probably think you should do more writing prompts, but you never seem to have the time. Those of you who aren't writers may only have a vague idea about what a writing prompt is. The prompt is a starting point for a writing project. It's a description of the idea behind it, usually, perhaps with requirements for what the structure of the work must be. And the fun part about writing to a prompt is to interpret the requirements and flesh it out into a complete work. For a writer, this is great practice, and it's an excellent opportunity to expand oneself, to expand one's ability as a writer, and to experiment in areas that may not be your expertise. But we never seem to have the time to do these, or at least not as many as we'd like to. Besides which, writing prompts are much more fun to read than to write. The Alkara Project is a monthly writing group run by Laurie Murray. Each month she posts 6 writing prompts. There's a prose option, a poetry option, a free write option, a list option. Option 5 is called A Picture is Worth 1,000 Words. It includes a photo, and you have to write something, anything, inspired by that photo. Option 6 is the grab bag option. 6 words are there, and you have to choose at least 3 of them and use those 3 or more in your piece. Each month, Alkara members choose one or more of these prompts to write to. Alkara began in November of 2001 as a monthly collaboration project offering one writing prompt. Shortly after that, Laurie became bored with just one option and decided to create The Buzz, is what she called it, which included one or two writing options each week, but not many people had time to do a writing project every single week. So, Laurie changed the format again, this time to 5 project options over a month. The number of options has grown and shrunk over the years, but that's basically still the same Alkara we have today. This format makes the Alkara project different from, and in my opinion, better than other writing prompts on the internet. Now, one of the things that intrigues me most about these writing prompts is that each writer has a different interpretation of the prompt. Take, for example, Alkara prompt number 5, A Picture is Worth 1,000 Words. In Project 39, November 2005, we saw a black and white photo of a rocky beach at dusk. Cloud-filtered sun illuminates tiny ripples infesting the infinite sea. And, silhouetted against this backdrop, almost out of the frame, is a person, someone. We don't know who. There were 16 entries for this option last month, and all are worth reading. Some were poetry, some stories, there were creative essays. Some talked about the sand in between your toes. Some were about memories. Some were allegorical or metaphorical. One, inspired by the black and white photo, talked about the world losing all of its colors. I myself wrote a 130-word flash fiction about a woman meeting her loved one on the beach under strange circumstances. I won't say any more about that. Instead, there are 2 other submissions I'd like to talk about. The first is a creative essay entitled Sea Change by Elizabeth W. Benefeld. It begins with the line, "Water was a central part of my earliest nightmares." This is what nonfiction writers call a compelling lead. It causes you to ask questions and keeps you reading to find out the answers. How could water be a nightmare? What happened to her that made her so terrified of water? Is she still horrified of water, or has she gotten over this? Is this water terror an obsession with her? Or is water something she's eventually learned to appreciate? Note that this pattern that essayists use is not so different from the tension a good story arc invokes. A good essay produces the same arc as a good story, and a good story produces the same feelings a good essay does. In fact, some essays use an actual story as the basis. I assume the events portrayed in Sea Change, I assume these events actually happened, because it's written in the form of an essay, and usually essay is nonfiction. But for all I know, this could be a work of fiction. If it's fictional, we call it a story. If it's nonfiction, we call it creative writing or creative nonfiction or an essay, and we put it into a completely different writing category. But really, the line between these two is thinner than I think we may like to admit. In fact, the events in Sea Change actually did happen. Elizabeth Benefeld told me this herself. Elizabeth Benefeld is a freelance writer and editor from Fargo, North Dakota, with a website, thewrittenword.net. She specializes in academic editing, but has also edited novels, nonfiction, and professional articles. In college, she started by studying math and science, but in her junior year, she switched to the humanities, earning a BA in English and philosophy. Then, she spent over 15 years in bank computer operations and a bit less than a year as a computer programmer before striking out as an editor and writer. Some of her favorite authors are William Sanders, Candace Robb, Julie Cherneda, Mindy Klasky, Wen Spencer, and Louise Marley. In Sea Change, We feel the author's horror of water, but also her romantic attachment to it after she came to terms with the sea. This is a short piece, moving and romantic, and well worth reading. By far the longest, most involved submission to last month's Alkira Project was Nathan Nelson's story, Midnight Mass. Inspired by the very same photo, this is a story of a young man seduced by a gay vampire. This is not a story for kids, or even for adults who are weak of heart. In the story preface, Nate writes, "One man's smut is, I hope, another man's allegory." I knew, however, that the symbolic meaning I saw in the story could not possibly be what he had intended. But when I asked him what he did intend the allegory to mean, this is what he said. Quote, "I rarely intend anything when I write a story, or if I did intend something at the beginning, it didn't turn out that way. This was a rare exception. I went into the story intending allegory, but I did not go into the story intending for the allegory to mean the same thing to everyone. I think the best allegory is the kind that can mean many things to many different people, and I think your understanding of what you read is likely more valid than any kind of preconceived intention I could tell you about. Allegory is more about the reader than the author, in my opinion." Unquote. This is before I even told him what I thought the story meant, or even that what I thought the story meant or what the story said to me was completely different, I already knew, than anything he could possibly have meant. Nate Nelson is a 21-year-old writer from Bridgeport, Ohio. He calls Bridgeport, quote, "an extremely small Midwestern town," unquote. But I actually knew where it was. It's right across the river from Wheeling, West Virginia. And Bridgeport has more people than Stars Hollow. As you know, I'm a huge Gilmore Girls fan. I grew up in a tiny little town outside Pittsburgh that has fewer people even than Stars Hollow does, a little tiny place called Burgettstown. Now, you can imagine how I felt when a friend of mine recently asked me where I originally was from, and I told him a tiny little town in Pennsylvania called Burgettstown. And he said, "Yeah, I've been there. We did a tour a few years ago that went through Burgettstown, visited the Episcopalian church there," or something to that effect. So I guess no matter how out of the way you think your hometown is, there's at least someone else who's heard of it. In the story Midnight Mass, a vampire in Key West, Florida, seduces a young man named Daniel, who's visiting over the Christmas holidays. The vampire draws him in into his hidden place where no one can even get in order to save him. Daniel speaks as though he no longer has control over his own thoughts. Now, as I read the story, I found myself horrified for this character. He's under the spell of the undead. I wanted somehow one of his friends to get in and save him, but I knew that this could not happen. I wanted a miracle, but I knew that was going to be extremely unlikely. And even if a miracle had occurred, the results probably would have been unsatisfying. This is a perfect picture, I thought, of the horror of being subjugated by one's own feelings, by one's own emotions, or by one's own passions. The story is, after all, an allegory. We can't control how we feel, but we can direct our feelings toward productive things rather than being dominated by them. However, once one allows himself to be caught in the grip of his own passions, he might as well have lost his mind. It's not working anymore anyhow. I am sure this is not what Nate had in mind. If you read certain pieces that I've written and posted to my live journal, you may understand why I see the story from that perspective. If you read what he's written, you'll probably understand why his perspective must be different. Maybe he meant that being seduced by a vampire, becoming one of the undead, well, that's sometimes a good thing. Sometimes it's beautiful. And they lived happily ever after, that sort of thing. In this case, the story would be a symbol of how sometimes what scares us is exactly what we need, and we need to surrender ourselves to the horrifying in order to be happy. If that's what he was thinking, I think he could have achieved that result more effectively if he had spent more time building sympathy for the vampire. You have to remember, the vampire is the villain, the horrific monster. We do not want our hero to become another one of his minions. We do not want him to fall prey to the undead. If you're going to make the vampire the hero, you have to spend an awful lot of effort making him as human as possible. Pat Murphy is really good at this in her work. In her novel, Nadia, The Wolf Chronicles, she builds sympathy for a werewolf. She does this within the first couple of chapters. I've also read several short stories she's written, all of which have strange characters as the protagonist, and she is always very effective at building sympathy for these strange characters, characters you usually would not feel sympathy for, you usually would not identify with them for one reason or another, and yet she draws you in. She makes that character your hero. But in Midnight Mass, the vampire horrified me. As beautiful as Daniel, the main character, said the vampire was, I could only see Nosferatu. I could only imagine that Daniel had been bewitched. He was not seeing what was really there, which only added to the terror I felt on Daniel's behalf. But definitely, these are stories that are well worth checking out, and other submissions to the Alcara Project are also worth reading. And especially if you're a writer, check it out. And remember that links to everything I cited here are on BeTheStory.com in this week's episode blog entry. And I also have links to other things that are related. So definitely check out BeTheStory.com. But don't go away yet. We'll be right back in a moment after this message.
Since the earliest times, people have gathered together to tell stories, to share their love for the great characters of old, to hold up the dark mirror of myth in order to see themselves in the light of truth and beauty. Here at the Bears Grow Podcast, the law is that stories have life, and that our lives are made greater by their inclusion. Here we support storytelling and all its practices, but most specifically, the form of role-playing. Each week, we've explored the complicated landscape of dreams and wonder. We discuss such diverse role-playing topics as kids and role-playing, romantic storytelling, and good story design in every role-playing genre, from dark future sci-fi to high magic fantasy to gothic terror. In future episodes, we'll have interviews with gaming visionaries and cutting-edge role-players, segments on good storytelling practice, and on somewhat controversial gaming topics such as sex, religion, and excessive violence in role-playing games. Join me, Sam Chupp, the co-creator of Wraith the Oblivion and Changeling the Dreaming, in a never-ending quest for the Holy Grail of gaming. Your journey with me starts on the web at bearsgrove.blogspot.com. Meet you at the Bears Grove!
I'd been reading Joe Haldeman's Hugo and Nebula Award-winning novel, The Forever War. I had actually bought this some time ago, but with the political climate in the United States, I just couldn't stomach getting too deeply into it. But now that I am into it, and I'm about, halfway through, I'm finding it to be a pretty well-written novel. No big surprise there, really. I kind of knew I was going to like it, or else I wouldn't have bought it. But after I'm done with that, what comes next? Well, actually, I've already ordered a copy of Alex Boutillier's new game, I hope I pronounced his name right, Achalias Enemies of the Wild. Some time ago, he did an interview for Four Fat Chicks, which is an adventure gaming website, though apparently they do get quite a few bizarre Google click-throughs. And this independent adventure title sounds like it could be quite good. You have to realize, when it comes to games, story for me is everything. Or at least almost everything. I'm willing to overlook an awful lot of technical problems and other production issues, even serious ones, if it has a good, strong story. I actually liked Zero Critical. Almost everyone else hated it because of all the technical issues and, you know, the poor graphics and, you know, all the standard things that they say. But I thought it had a really great story. Basically, the independent authors are willing to take more risks with their games, so you find a lot more creative ways of utilizing story in the game. And so I'm really looking forward to Achilles and hoping that it's going to be of this nature. Well, that should take me almost halfway to Christmas. After that, I'm considering maybe picking up something by Lauren Royal, or maybe reading Storyteller by Kate Wilhelm. There are a couple of classic films, believe it or not, I have not yet gotten the opportunity to see, like Citizen Kane or Rosemary's Baby. All right, you can stop laughing now. One of these times I'll have to find an excuse for playing for you the clip from Gilmore Girls where Rory visits Harvard University and witnesses the humongous libraries with all of the books. And she's just completely overwhelmed. She reads all the time, more books than anyone else in the whole world has read, or more books than anyone could actually read, I'm sure. She looks up at this humongous library, only one component of a 13 million volume collection, and suddenly just says, "I am a failure. I am stupid. I am uninformed and ignorant, and I can't even think of a second synonym for uninformed. I suck." Well, sometimes I feel like that. There's just so much great stuff to read, to listen to watch, to play. I will never have all enough time to take it all in. So I could really use some help in picking and choosing what are the best things, even classic works, which I may be completely in the dark regarding. Because, of course, I'm ignorant and I suck. So, I really need help. In the meantime, next week, I'm going to look at the top three winners of Interactive Fiction Competition 2005. IF Comp is an annual competition of, well, interactive fiction. And you don't hear very much about interactive fiction in the commercial realm anymore. But believe me, it is alive and well among independent authors. And some of it is really, really good. Unfortunately, this year I've been way too busy to follow IF Comp, so I am completely in the dark regarding the quality of this year's entries. But I will play these top three games. All of the entries to IF Comp have to be relatively short. It's supposed to be able to be playable within a 2-hour time frame. But truthfully, I don't know exactly what I'm getting into. The winners of 2005's Interactive Fiction Competition, next week on Be the Story. I'll see you then.